Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week is William Miller.
How you doing, Blake Buck?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited for this show. I'm ready. We're changing up the format this week. Are you excited, William Miller?
And how are we changing up the format, Blake Buck?
Well, we decided to have less content and more bullshit. I mean, what? No.
I approve of this format. I approve of this format.
And who is that? Is that Justin Fick?
That's Justin Fick. How you doing, fellas?
Of Kill Monty fame?
That it is.
It's going good. Oh, did we lose William Miller?
No, I'm still here. I'm still here.
Oh, okay, you just lost interest in the show. I got you. So what are the changes that we've made, William Miller? Can you kind of detail them for us?
Well, as you said, less content and more bullshit. That's not entirely true. What we decided to do is instead of simply regurgitating the news that we find on GameSpot 5 minutes before the show begins, we're going to pick one article each that we think is really important from the week and really break it down and talk about it, all three of us together.
That's right. And we're also going to be decreasing the number of releases instead of the 15. I know you guys are tired of hearing about Avatar The Last Airbender, so we're cutting down on the lesser releases each week.
Also, Tom Barbalay has been nice enough to prepare for us a warning if the content to follow is not work safe. We heard it on the show last week. If you'd like to play that for us now, Mr. Barbalay. Thank you. And so if you hear that, turn your speakers down in your cubicle there.
Absolutely. All right, and this is your game. Oh, son, even Tom Barbalay left me a note last week and said, Blake Buck, you should have the date ready beforehand. And this is your gaming news for February 16th, 2007.
You're right.
Man. Oh, man, I got that son. Damn. You guys better watch out. This new show's going strong. This week in the news, the Gathering of Developer Head launches a new publisher, Sony Pictures making the new Metal Gear movie, and rewards coming for gamer scores. All this and more on this week's Best Damn Podcast Ever.
That's it.
That's it, son. We got it. All right, William Miller, what's this heat you got?
I'll start this show. I saw this article in a couple different places and thought it was pretty interesting. Gathering of Developers, otherwise known as GOD or G-O-D or simply The Gathering, the two guys that headed that up, Mike Wilson and Harry Miller, have broken off to form a new publisher, Gamecock Media Group.
Now, wait a minute.
That's right.
Gamecock?
It's like it sounds like...
Now, we already have the Wii, son. I mean, this is just a step in the wrong direction.
So as the name might suggest, it's a fun, you know, progressive publisher catering to artists and indie developers. So these two guys, Gathering Developers, if you will recall, was purchased by Take-Two Interactive in 1999, almost, I guess, about a year, maybe a little over a year after it was created. But they're responsible for some really awesome titles. Serious Sam, Max Payne, and Tropico are among them. But after they got bought out, they kind of, you know, they were consolidated into what's now 2K Games, and things got pretty corporate real fast. So these two guys decided they didn't want to, you know, they didn't want to deal with you know, already existing IPs or big budget sequels, and you know, really cater to the indie developer.
Hmm.
Now, did you see their gang sign? They have a gang sign. It looks like a gamecock.
I saw the gang sign. Is that the hand thing that he's doing in the picture there? I guess we can't really put that in the album art because Blake Buck's lazy. But
yeah, it looks sort of like the AOK symbol.
Yeah.
with your thumb and pointer sort of in the head of a cock, if you will.
Everybody play along.
Yep, I got mine.
And your other three fingers are the plume. That's the gamecock gang sign.
I see. Well, that's...
Got it. So, they, in addition to this article, posted a couple of places, I found on Kotaku a video of one of these guys. I don't know whether it's Wilson or Miller, but one of them's running around Vegas in a chicken suit doing crazy stuff, like people and I don't know what all else.
I love it.
But these guys look crazy, and if it's just, and these are the same guys that got in trouble every year at E3 for their booth babes. You know the guys I'm talking about. So,
oh, yeah.
So Gathering Developers now, the same guys made Gathering Developers is now Gamecock Media Group. So they've already got some publisher or some developers lined up to do games. Bungie has a game in the works.
Now careful, it's not Bungie, it's Wideload.
Oh right, Wideload.
Son, you got to get this stuff right.
Look, I'm reading on... Look, baby. I'm reading in the press release right here. It says, already the industry's most creative developers are clamoring to work with Gamecock. The company has signed several major original titles across platforms. Alex Seropian. Is that right?
Alex Seropian. Come on. You don't know anything, son. How long you been doing this show? Come on.
Founder of CEO of Bungie, creator of the best-selling game franchise, Halo, has a title in the works.
And what did they do before this game they're working on now? Big Mac game.
Oni?
Stubbs the Zombie, son. Oh. Come on.
Oh. Well, Oni was also published by Gathering Developers, by the way.
They did the bit of the Mac.
I think that's a stump. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. See, I thought Aspyr published Stubbs the Zombie, though.
It was published by Aspyr for the Mac.
Oh, okay. They only did the Mac version. Got it.
I think they might have done PC, too, but they definitely didn't do the Xbox. No, I thought they did all three. If you know the answer to this question, feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com.
So I wanted to use this article to sort of open up a discussion on publishers. And we don't do a lot of talking about publishers, but in a way, like, the publisher is the determining factor in what games get made and what actually ends up in the hands of the public most of the time. So there's some inherent problems with publishers these days. Justin Fick, go.
Well, I mean, you know, publishers, to me, it's not like they're, you know, because people have this view of publishers as the evil side to the developers that are like the good guys, like the developers are thinking of all these these crazy new cool innovative ideas, and publishers are the guys in suits that are, you know, branding them with corporate logos and whipping them back into their cubicles, and it's really not
the EA spouse letters.
Yeah. It's not all like the EA spouse letter. I mean, there are, you know, and in fact, all the publishers that I've dealt with so far, they're all very much, you know, they're always putting feelers out for cool new, you know, original ideas. You know, Freeverse is, you know, they go out of their way to find cool new titles, and then they go out of their way to find, you know, like really talented, you know, young developers like myself, and it's just like, but I think what it comes down to for publishers is that, you know, is that publishers do have a bottom line, and where developers really do not. I mean, it's really, you know, it comes down to what's going to make the publisher money. And, you know, they're always looking for ideas to make that innovative idea into, you know, into that thing that makes them money. But I mean, it's just not always the case. So, but I mean, it's really cool to see, you know, see a lot of independent publishers, you know, like, you know, Gathering of Developers, Gamecock, and seeing, you know, much smaller studios like Wideload, you know, where they're really much more about, you know, having that freedom and the ability to publish a game and not really have to answer to anybody. I mean, Gamecock actually has, you know, with their announcement, they announced five titles that are in the works, and they all look very different. I mean, I think one of them is called I think it's Fury, which is a PvP only massive multiplayer online game. Wideloads is I don't know how I feel about it yet, but Wideload's game is called Hail to the Chimp.
It sounds like a Freeverse title.
It kind of does, actually. But it's a party game. I don't know much about it yet. I mean, I haven't seen too many details, but it's a party game, and it involves like all the animals of the jungle. I guess they're all trying to become king of the animals or something, and it's all about
thumbs down.
Well, party game. It's one of those things where I got to play it first. Party game. I don't care about the idea.
I don't know. It seems like all too often party games just end up sucking really bad. But who knows? Maybe it'll be good.
But I mean, Alex Seropian behind it, and, you know, Wideload Games. I mean, Stubbs the Zombie was a very funny game, very, you know, very witty. And then, of course, you know, all the influence he had over, you know, like Marathon and Pathways and all the old Bungie games. So I don't know. Hail to the Chimp is what I'm keeping my eye on. I mean, the concept of it is kind of suspect, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So Gamecock came out of the gate with four titles. So as Fick mentioned, Fury is one of them. Insecticide by Crackpot Entertainment, is one of them. It's a film noir adventure game set in a decaying world run by bugs. We've got Mushroom Men by Red Fly Studios, set in an incredibly detailed, stylized world where mushrooms have taken on a human-like feature and are now embroiled in a civil war. Hail to the Chimp, Wide Load Games, and Hero by Firefly Studios, a brutal but comical romp through the real world of medieval dragons, coming to next-gen consoles. So it sounds like these guys have got something lined up and ready to go, and they have a pretty good track record. I think that that GOD, 80% of their games turn to profit, you know, in their short independent time. So
here's what I want to know about the life cycle. Let's say that Gamecock gets a big game and it's suddenly a breakout hit, right? And everybody wants this game. It's the best selling game all year. Do they then further fund like the sequel of that game? It almost seems like by fostering like big budget title from a breakout hit, they're becoming less independent, more corporate in a way.
Well, unfortunately, you got to look at take Red Octane. Red Octane is sort of a developer like this, really, or publisher like this, really small, and they come out with Guitar Hero, and then what happens? They get bought.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sort of.
I guess that's just they're just going to have to keep making new companies every time they get a big hit. That's the only solution.
I guess that's your life cycle.
I mean, that's that. It's kind of like the growing up process of all these companies is that, you know, you get a really good game and everyone really wants to see another one. And, you know, probably if it's a really good game, everyone, you know, on the team wants to make another one.
Well, all right. Well, I'm done with that power. But I hear, Justin Fick, you've got some Metal Gear Secret Heat for us.
My heat this week is I heard that Sony Pictures is now they have revealed themselves to be the ones behind the Metal Gear movie.
I like your noise better, Miller.
But I guess the Metal Gear movie was announced back in E3. I didn't hear about this, but it was announced that, by Konami that they were seeking to make a Metal Gear movie. And no one knew who was working on it. But today, Sony revealed that they were the ones behind the project. Now, this is a live-action movie.
Hmm.
It's not CG.
That's good.
Yeah. So a quote here by, what is this bag's name? Yair Landau. Says that, quote, "We're working with the Metal Gear guys," and he said this at DICE in Las Vegas.
They don't even know their name.
He says, "It's a very cinematic game. It really lends itself to movie telling. But the question is, how do you translate Snake's experience into a full arc that conforms to what audiences expect on the large screen?" So there's a lot of heated debate around, you know, GameSpot, and by heated debate, I mean idiots smashing their faces on keyboards. But people, you know, asking, you know, just like, you know, what are they expecting? What kind of plot they want? Do they want the plot of Metal Gear Solid 1? Do they want the whole overarching plot, something totally different?
See, I think if they were to take the Metal Gear franchise, the characters and sort of the setting and the motifs and rewrite a completely different story that really fits into the expected three-act structure of a film and delivered it, I think it'd be all right.
Yeah, I think if they did it as like a side story, like, you guys ever played the Game Boy Metal Gear? It sort of took place between like two of the other games, and it was just kind of a side story, not that big of a deal, and it worked within the, you know, and it was a good game because it didn't try too much, you know, it wasn't trying to rewrite the entire storyline of the Metal Gear saga.
Now, the important point of debate is that we keep coming back to at GameSpot is who is going to play Solid Snake?
Kurt Russell, baby.
Blake Buck.
Oh no, Kurt Russell. No way.
Come on now,
dude. Snake is not manly enough to be played by Kurt Russell.
Look, Snake was modeled after Snake Plissken. Who's more perfect than Kurt Russell? Come on.
You don't know. I'm always sick by my guns. Bruce Campbell, baby.
Bruce Campbell's gotten fat. Oh, did you see Bruce Campbell in that Old Spice commercial? This is sort of tangential.
Dude, that Old Spice commercial rocks.
That's gold. That's so awesome. I loved it. Anyway,
that's the one where he gets up and walks past the painting in a room that never ends and
that goes on for an hour.
He gets up from his plush chair, walks down a 60-foot hallway, which is his room, and then sits down in another chair
into another plush chair.
At the start of that shot, like before he gets up, if you look on the right hand side of the frame, there's like a chainsaw like on the mantle. I love it.
Now, did it have three clocks all set to different times?
You gotta watch those Mo Money boys.
He's eating chips all the time.
Come on, Sugar Man, you know we got to roll dog pound. So anyway, they also mention in this article.
That's my new name on the podcast, by the way, Dog Pound or Sugar Man. Either one of those will work.
Sony is pondering an EverQuest film. Now, what do you guys think about that? I'm just way excited about an EverQuest film.
Are you saying that facetiously, or are you actually really excited about an EverQuest movie?
It could be half and half. I'm not really sure.
Like the way I look at it is I was excited reading this article until I got down to the EverQuest line. Ooh. and that's where it's like, well, kind of getting into that Uwe Boll territory but it's like,
dude, I can't wait for Postal to come out so I can see Lotax get beat up. That is the only reason I want to see that movie.
Which is why I think Postal is gonna be one of the best movies of the year.
Better be awesome.
I'm serious because I've talked to Bill Kunkel a couple times and he does some design consulting with Running in Scissors, mm-hmm. the Postal guys, and he was telling us about Running with Scissors working with Uwe Boll, and he said that Running with Scissors actually knew about Uwe Boll's reputation and deliberately got him. Those of us that were there, we were like, well, dude, you know, it's like, you know, he's going to screw up the script and it's not going to make any sense. It's going to be a horrible movie. He's like, yeah, we're all looking forward to it.
Like, I read this interview, I think it was on IMG, actually, with the guys from Postal 2, and they were talking about working with Uwe Boll. And they were like, yeah, sometimes we'd, like, have, like, you know, we'd have differences of opinion where we'd want to do one thing, and then Uwe would want to do something else. Yeah, whenever that happened, Uwe won.
So I have a feeling that it's going to be so completely nonsensical and stupid that it will be one of the best films of the year.
I think so.
It better be. Second only to Blood Rain 2, which he's also making probably at the same time.
Dude, Blood Rain 2 is already out, son. Blood Rain 3 is what I'm waiting on. The holy trilogy of raining blood. Microsoft has announced a contest to reward players for their gamer scores on Xbox 360.
Oh, man. Justin Fick.
Really?
Justin Fick, now's the time to cash in. So Microsoft challenges gamers to increase their scores by 1,500 points in 60 days for prizes, including games. Registration begins on February 12th.
Dude, that's today. Hold on.
Go, baby.
Hold on. I think he fell over.
I had to run to my Xbox.
All right, so basically, Microsoft has this contest. You sign up on February 12th, which is today, actually. I guess back in the – probably about, I don't know, 2-3 days ago once Barbara edits this show. And basically, you sign up on the website, and if you increase your gamer score – which is, for those of you who don't know what a gamer score is, when you play a game, you get little, like, unlockable achievements. They're usually in, like, increments of 20 to 50, and they add up to a number that's displayed by your name on your, like, sort of like your little gamer picture, right? So you can see, oh, how good other people are at the same kind of games you play. Anyway, so for those of you who have Xbox 360 and want to sign up for the program, if you increase your gamer score by 1,500 points within the next 60 days, you are going to win prizes, my friend. So here, there are three tiers of prizes here. So level one is for people who start the contest with less than 5,000 points. All right, these are the scrub prizes. So if you have less than 5,000 to start with and you get another 1,500, your prizes are the following. A special gamer picture, Xbox 360 dashboard theme, and an Xbox Live arcade game, Contra. So not a bad deal. Not a bad deal. For those of you who have between 5,000 and 999 Xbox points, or gamer score points at the start of the contest.
That's Justin Fick.
Which would be Justin Fick. Blake Barker's in tier 1. He sucks. I got like 3,000. So for tier 2, between 5,000 and 9999, prizes are a special gamer picture, Xbox 360 dashboard theme, Xbox Live arcade game Contra, 100 Microsoft points, which is $1.25, and that you can use to buy more games and stuff off the marketplace, and a contest t-shirt. And finally, level 3 contestants, these are people who have over 10,000 points and more. And also, remember, get the 1,500 over the next 6 months. We'll be getting a special gamer picture, Xbox 360 dashboard theme, blah, 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 Xbox game Contra, 200 Microsoft points, which is 250, a contest t-shirt, and a free copy of Fusion Frenzy. So those are some pretty good prizes.
Hold on. You hear the sound?
Uh-oh.
That's me signing up for this contest. Hold on.
So, Justin Fick, how many gamer score points do you have exactly?
Okay, well, Justin Fick right now has about 7,000, I think. It's respectable, but it's nowhere near some serious whorage. So, I could be higher. So, I am right smack in the middle of tier 2.
Your EP could be bigger.
My EP could be bigger. Now, but I'm actually thinking, mm-hmm. because this is a 60-day contest, I'm actually thinking, what would happen if I got myself up to 10,000 points first?
And then registered.
Maybe, but, you know, got to that halfway through this contest, then signed up, and then got the next 1,500, and then registered.
I guess you could do that.
So instead of getting 1,500 points in 60 days, it's more like 4,500 points in 60 days.
That's true. And you would win gamer picture, dashboard theme, Contra, 200 Microsoft points t-shirt, and a $50 game. All for just getting, what is that? What would that be? You know, like 1,500 points or so?
4,500.
Oh, I guess so.
Keep in mind that a lot of these prizes are repeated. So the difference between tier 3 and tier 2 is $1.25 and Fusion Frenzy 2.
Lame.
And Fusion Frenzy 2 sucks.
Yeah, how did that fare for reviews? I didn't really look at it.
Thumbs down.
I don't know, but I grabbed a demo of it because I think, didn't we talk about it on the podcast?
We may have.
But I tried it and it sucked. Mini judgment sucked. Lame.
So yeah, so if you're big into the game score points, go check it out. But by the way, this is only available to people in the United States. So if you're in the UK or wait, nobody's playing Xbox in Japan. But if you were, you wouldn't be able to play as it's only for the US. But still, pretty cool contest. I'm excited. I'm excited about it.
You know, what other kinds of contests could you do with gamer score? I mean, to make these points actually do something for you.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people always talk about, oh, there's cheating. You know, like people get like download saves off the internet and stuff. So like you can't really give away too much, you know, because mm-hmm. like if you give away too much, people are going to cheat and you could have potentially a lot of like people abusing the system. But little stuff like this, like, you know, 200 points, a t-shirt, and Fusion Frenzy, that's not bad. Not a bad deal.
Well, Justin, you have to let us know how it goes.
Sounds good. I will be finishing up my registration shortly after this show, and I'm currently contemplating how I'm going to get these 1,500 points.
Dude, a Cameo, Elements of Power, baby.
I already did Cameo. I did Cameo, I did Madden, I did the NBA game. So keep in mind, listeners, if you have not played Madden 06 and NBA 2K6, you can join this contest and you can pretty much get the 1,500. You can get 2,000 points in about, I don't know, 40 minutes.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And NBA 2K6 is wicked fast. You can get all 1,000, and then Madden you can get 700. Pretty quickly, and then you can get the other 300 by like simulating 30 years of franchise, and you don't got to play any games. You just press the start button every 5 seconds for about 30 minutes.
Well, I may have to do this because Blake Bug wants a t-shirt. I want that T-shirt.
Blake Black, you remember how much you yourself out at Macworld for T-shirts? Remember that?
Dude, I got all the T-shirts at Macworld. Don't even talk to me. I'm the T-shirt master, all right?
You wore that nasty, skanky eye skin T-shirt for, like, the whole week.
And you know what? Blake Buck won the prizes. I remember it was the last day of me. I was trying to win this prize for wearing an eye skin shirt. And the last day, I went up to their booth, and I was like, right here. I've been wearing it all week. Where's my prize? And they're like, it's right here. And I'm like, yeah, that's right.
Oh my god!
It's right here. That's what they said.
Yeah, I still have my hideous eye skin shirt, and that was pretty much the apparel.
Dude, I threw that away. I didn't even bother like giving it away to homeless people. No, I threw that away. That thing went in the garbage.
Awesome, I love it. Well, do we got anything else we want to talk about this gamer score?
I don't know. I think that about wraps it up. If you like this new format, give us feedback.
Feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com or call our listener line at 845-BATTLE-9. All right, now it's time for releases.
All right, this week in releases, we've got Wii Play, release date February 12, 2007. Wii Play will get you off and going with Wii console and a variety of options. I don't know what that means.
You don't know anything about this game.
Is this like the new controller?
Yeah, this is the game. It comes with a controller.
Yeah.
You buy the controller and you get the game. This game with it. And it's like a bunch of mini games, kind of like Wii Sports is, you know, just a...
Dude, I know what's going on. I knew what's going on. Shut up. All right.
You don't know what's going on, son? What time is it? What time is it right now?
Dude, it's 9:43. We got Ghost Rider February 13th, based on the upcoming film. Ghost Rider will utilize characters from the Hollywood adaptation of the Marvel comic universe and The Warriors for PSP on the 12th. Warriors is based on the 1979 gang film, the same name in the game. You'll play as the leader of the gang that is struggling to gain control of the streets of New York.
All right, we've also got Galactic Civilizations 2, Dark Avatar, for the PC, coming out on February 14th, a Valentine's release. This expansion for the Galactic Wars 2, Dreadlords, blah, blah, DBZ Goku adds new opponents to add the ability to create custom opponents, new custom units, new custom campaign, which is greatly expanded in the gameplay of Galactic Civilizations 2.
Now, I'm confused here. I see the word Galactic, and I see the word Avatar. Now, Galactic says to me space. And Dark Avatar says to me, Dungeon Dice. So I'm confused.
I don't know. It's a combination. It's a synergy, they call it.
Somebody add Dungeon Dice to our wiki.
Yeah, somebody get on that. Wiki Fairy, it's your job. All right, Justin, take these heats.
All right, we also have Ratchet & Clank Size Matters for the PSP on the 13th. Ratchet & Clank is an all-new sci-fi adventure made exclusively for the PSP, and it features a variety of new weapons and gadgets. We also have Gurren, a Monstrous Adventure for PSP. Gurren, a Monstrous Adventure, is a 3D action RPG for the PSP, which has you saving kidnapped monsters from an evil spirit.
Sounds lame.
I'm noticing that there's a lot of PSP heat this week, and a lot of nothing else for the rest of the world.
That's true, there is a lot of PSP.
Like, I don't think I'd play the Warriors or Gurren, but I don't know. The Ratchet & Clank kind of has me a little wet.
Dude, Ghost Rider? What are you talking about, Ghost Rider, son, this week on PSP? I'm going to be first in line.
You like that Nicolas Cage, don't you, Blake Buck?
I've heard nothing about this game.
Oh, snap, is Nicolas Cage in that movie? Oh, damn, I'm going to get two.
I think so. I think that's Nicolas Cage in that movie.
Dude, have you guys seen that video that's been going around the internet of, like, Nick Cage in that movie The Wicker Man, and they're, like, pouring bees on his face?
What? No.
Dude, look up Wicker Man on YouTube, and you can see bees being poured on Nick Cage's face, and he's like, oh, God, the bees. Gold. All right, it's time for Judgment. All right, this week's Judgment is a special one, near and dear to my heart. It's Sid Meier's Pirates on the PSP. Now, a lot of you might already know that Blake Bug's a big fan of Sid Meier's Pirates. And I've already bought the game on Xbox, but I heard, hey, it's coming out on PSP. I can be driving my car and plundering the high seas at the same time. So I went out and picked it up. And it's all right. Sid Meier's Pirates. For those of you who don't know what Pirates is, you drive around in your little pirate boat. You know, you shoot a lot of little bad pirates. You siege their ships. You can steal their ships. Get their guys to work on your boat. Go sell their boat. Go make more loot. Go buy more guns. Go kill more dudes. Go, like, raid towns. Get more loot. It's all about getting more money, more loot, more everything. It's kind of subscribes to that same school of thought as, like, Escape Velocity. You know, where, like, the whole goal of the game was to just get more stuff. So it's a pretty cool game. I liked it on the Xbox, I'll talk about the pros and the cons of the PSP version. So the pros of the PSP version, it's got really addictive gameplay. You know, there's a lot. It's essentially a collection of mini games. You can date governor's daughters. You can sneak into towns. You can raid towns. You can, you know, pirate fight with other pirates and stuff, and find hidden treasure and find secret Mayan ruins, all that fun stuff. So it's not really, like, each of the games individually is not very deep, but as a whole, like, you get very addicted to it. So it's a pretty fun game. The PSP version is pretty true to the original. It's sort of a mix between the PC and the Xbox version, and that, like, the PC version had a little bit bigger world map, and the Xbox version had a little bit smaller, and it's kind of in between. They've also added in, the Xbox version had pre-rendered cutscenes, while the PSP is, like, all in-game, so it's a little more cohesive. So, that's all good stuff. Now we get to the cons. One thing I really liked from the Xbox and PC versions of this game is they had, what I would call, like, a meta game. When you played the game, there was one screen that showed you not only the stuff you accomplished in this game, but, like, all the goals you had accomplished in other games as well, like how many secret ruins you had found, like how many of the, you know, bad pirates you had killed, and it tracked, like, all your game stats. And that screen is sadly missing from the PSP version. So that added a lot of replay to me, and it's not there in the PSP version, so losing some points there, I'm going to be honest. And you also couldn't have high scores in this one. That the same screen had, like, you know, like, top pirates, and it would show, like, you know, your best scores at the end of the game. And there's no secret unlockable content like there was on the Xbox, like, unlockable concept art or, you know, little video pieces. But overall, if you hadn't played Pirates, thumbs up. It's a good, fairly decent port of it. Not perfect, but, yeah, thumbs up.
Now, I gotta tell you, Blake Buck, I like me some Pirates, but I don't know if I'd be sold without a keel haul button.
On a what?
With a keel haul button. And I think keel haul should be mapped to square.
What is keel haul?
You never heard of keel haul? Pirates keel haul.
Dude, what is he talking about? He's crazy.
Dude, I don't know what he's talking about.
See, you don't know a keel haul either, but I'm the one getting yelled at.
So you've never heard of keel hauling?
Miller's never heard of it either. That's some crazy term that you're talking about. Little crazy words coming out of your mouth, Justin Fick.
Dude, keel haul is a pirate verb. It's a maritime punishment. I'm looking this up on Wikipedia for your...
Dude, what are you talking about, baby?
All right, process. Keel hauling. The sailor was tied to a rope that looped beneath the vessel, thrown overboard on one side of the ship, dragged the sailor under the ship's keel to the other side. As the hull was often covered in barnacles and other marine growth, this could result in lacerations and other injuries. This generally happened if the offender was pulled quickly. What? If pulled slowly, his weight might lower him sufficiently to miss the barnacles, but might result in his drowning.
What's wrong with you, Justin Fick? Good God. I'm talking about a happy pirate game. You're talking about, like, barnacle torture? Come on, son.
Dude, you cannot have a pirate game without keel hauling and raping and pillaging.
Well, this game is very G-rated. It's very, like, you know, family-friendly. It's a very romanticized version of the pirate life.
Thumbs down. If it doesn't have a keel haul button, thumbs down.
Okay. The more you know with Justin Fick. Do, 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 do. And now it's time for the jank. I ain't a winner. Got a hot hand. Place your bets, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so I got two janks for you guys. I feel like I'm talking the whole time. Nobody's saying anything. Somebody else say something. Somebody take this jank so I don't talk for an hour.
All right, well, Blake Buck already reviewed this game, but apparently you can get Sid Meier's Pirates for the PSP for $20 at GameStop.
That's right. What a savings. $20 at GameStop, Sid Meier's Pirates. So if you like it, pick it up. We've also got Freedom Fighters on the PS2, Xbox, and GameCube, Nintendo. Nintendo GameCube. I hate that abbreviation. So you can pick up Freedom Fighters from most GameStops for about $7. So Freedom Fighters, for those of you who hadn't played, it's sort of like the communists are taking over America, and it's set in modern times. You got to shoot the communists. And it's a fairly fun action-adventure game. You have like up to 12 squad mates, and it's a good way to kill a weekend. So no, not a bad use of $7.
The only communist game I need to play is Super Soviet Missile Mastar, which is the mini game in Alien Hominid.
All right, well, I'll be looking out for that. Now it's time for the discussion. What's the discussion this week, guys? What's going on?
All right, the discussion this week is, I guess, inspired by a recent video post, and it's called Show Me My Opponent, discussion on video game bosses. That's awesome. Whoever came up with that? Who came up with that? Is that you, Justin Fick?
It wasn't me.
Wasn't me.
That was sitting there in the wiki.
Yeah, that's been sitting in our wiki ideas. If you want to contribute ideas to our wiki, feel free.
All right, so I guess I'll start this show here with a brief history of the video game boss, according to Wikipedia. So are y'all ready for this?
Oh, I'm ready.
So in the early days, before there were video games per se, we had pinball machines. Now, you never could win a pinball game because it just got too ridiculous for you to win. So there weren't any bosses or anything like that in pinball. And then you had games like Pong in the early days of video games. You couldn't win those either because they got too fast. But starting, I guess, around 1978 or 1979, there was a game called Adventure for the Atari 2600. It had three dragons.
Dragon.
And you didn't actually have to defeat
Ducks.
These dragons, but they were bigger than the
Ducks.
Other monsters in the game.
I don't think Justin Fick likes this one. Something's telling me.
Do they look like ducks, Justin Fick?
No. Adventure is an awesome game. They just happen to look like ducks.
Yeah. So then the next one was in 1979 with a game, little game called Galaxian. Galaxian had waves of ships that would attack the players, but every once in a while you'd hit a flagship which was bigger. So you destroy the flagship and you get a bonus to your score. So then I guess they progressed on from there until you start having games like platformers that have the Koopa at the end. Or whatever.
The Koopa. All right. Okay, the Koopa.
And it just went from there.
So there was nothing between Galaxian and Koopa? Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Wayne Miller? Yeah.
Oh. All right, so...
The black monolith from 2001 came down and Galaxian became Koopa.
What? So, Justin Fick, what are some of your favorite video game bosses?
Well, I gotta say, I do have to give props to the first video game boss that I ever encountered, which was an old game for the Commodore 64 called, actually before the Commodore 64, this is the Commodore VIC-20, and it was called Gorf.
Gorf.
Now, and this probably would have been a good stump too, but Gorf is. It's one of those games like Space Invaders and Galaxian, and I believe it came before Galaxian with the introduction of the boss. So the kind of like Gorf was the first level was laid out kind of like Space Invaders, and then you had different themes of levels, and I think there was four or five of them altogether. There was one level where it was called Laser Battle.
Laser Battle.
Which was basically you against laser battle, and it was you against four really awesome laser enemies, and then the last one was this big massive mega mothership, and it had big huge shields kind of like the way it was in Space Invaders with their little bunkers that enemies can shoot away. Only you got to shoot his away, and you got to get through that and get to the mothership. So that was the first boss that I've ever seen.
Hmm.
But I'd have to give a couple shout outs. I'm still thinking of the best. I'm still stalling. But I definitely have to give a shout out to Kraid from Metroid.
Wait, Super Metroid or Metroid 1?
From the series. Because Kraid kind of had like Kraid is like the big underappreciated boss of the Metroid series. Like they have Mother Brain, and then they have Ridley that comes back every time, and he's always so awesome. But you don't really hear much about Kraid. And Kraid was the first boss to me that took up several f***ing screens in Super Metroid.
Dude, he had those spikes that shot out of his stomach. He was bad news.
So, and I was kind of sad to not see him in Metroid Prime. I think there's a part where you scan like his corpse or something. I forget. But he was not in Metroid Prime, and that's why Metroid Prime sucked. So I have to give one shout out to Kraid. I have to give a negative shout out. This is probably the worst boss I've ever seen. Is Uh-oh. Pretty much every boss at the end of any Gradius game. Now for those of us that are not familiar with Gradius, it's a side scrolling shooter, probably some of the hardest shooters out there. I mean, like doesn't have on Gradius 5, and you're dodging like hundreds of bullets and shooting hundreds of things at the same time, and you get through all these levels, boss after boss after hard level after impossible level, and the last boss is pathetic. Like, there's actually one boss in Gradius, the last boss in Gradius 5, you pretty much just watch him die. You get to the last boss, he speaks a couple of words you can't hear because it's in broken English, and then you watch him die. That's how you beat the last boss in Gradius 5. It's pathetic.
Lame. So is that like sort of like a running joke in the series?
I don't know, but every Gradius game has had a shitty last boss. Hmm. Like I've only played one Gradius game, I think it's Gradius 3, where the last boss actually shoots at you. And then he shoots at you like 10 times, and then you watch him die.
Lame.
Lame.
So, boo earns, to use Freeverse vernacular, the greatest bosses.
I think the most distinctive boss that I can think of from my childhood was Gravity Man from Mega Man 5. Because he was pretty cool. That whole like level was pretty cool, because he'd flip the gravity on you and you'd go upside down. And I just didn't know what to think about that. It took me a long time to wrap my head around that one.
Rocked his world.
I think the hardest boss I've ever encountered was the last boss in Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. Because like, no matter how much you leveled up in that game, it didn't matter. He was going to beat your ass a few times and kill you at the end of that game. Because he'd petrify both your players, and you couldn't do anything about it. It was just luck if you got through that.
Dude, William Miller, do you want me to rock your world right now?
Go.
you cast the cure spell on him. It kills him in 2 hits.
Are you serious?
God!
I'm dead serious.
Use a...
Oh my God! I hate you, Justific.
Like, I don't know why this is, because it's not a bug. It's clearly like by design. But like you hit him with the strongest sword in the game, does about 900 damage dice, and then you hit him with like the strongest spell in the game, hits him for like 2,000 damage dice. That's the strongest spell. You hit him with a cure spell, which you have like a million of, and you get right at the beginning of the game, does like 20,000 damage dice.
How'd you... Okay, did you figure that out, or did you hear it from somebody?
I actually figured that out.
No, you didn't. Shut up.
Dude, nobody figures that out.
Shut up.
No, you didn't.
Dude, I figured that out.
No, you didn't, baby.
Dude, it is a staple of all Final Fantasy games that cure spell hurts undead people.
Yeah, but you didn't know he was undead, though.
That's true.
It wasn't readily... He wasn't like a zombie or something. It wasn't readily apparent he was undead.
No.
Dude, cheat. Cheat. You had one of them game genies on your tape. I know.
You just fit cheats.
Cheat. Nope. Dude, game genie was the anti-boss.
That was like crack for your video game tapes. Like, it could permanently screw up your heat.
Don't put this... I remember the Super NES one had like a switch, so like you could wait to turn a code on till you was ready for it.
We should do a show on cheating
on game cheating.
I forgot about that mess.
I hate you. I hate you, Justin Fick.
That's next week. All right, so Blake Buck has got his bosses ready. All right. Oh, snap. I forgot all of them. What am I doing?
All right.
What was the first one? Oh, I remember. All right. One of my favorite bosses of all time has to be, of course, the Sinistar. You guys remember Sinistar?
I live.
That's right. The Sinistar. He was one of the first.
I remember Sinistar.
It was Midway. It was one of like the first games I can ever remember that had like digitized sound. And so you drove around your little spaceship kind of like asteroids, collecting these like shooting asteroids and collecting these little blips, these little dots. And once you got enough dots, the Sinistar appeared. And he was this real bad looking skull planet man. And whenever he was flying around, he'd always taunt you with his cheesy digitized voice. Beware, I live. Die, mortal. I hunger. And then whenever he got near you, he would just eat you. That's what the Sinistar did.
Now, I gotta say that Sinistar, to this day, not a whole lot of games will startle the out of me the way Sinistar does.
I know, he zooms on screen. I live!
Because you're just mind your own business, you're shooting rocks, collecting dots, and all of a sudden this big Sinistar comes in and eats your face.
And nobody knew how to beat that game. That game was so complex. You had to, like, collect the dots and then, like, shoot a certain number of missiles. And so nobody knew how to beat that game. Sinistar just ate you every time. I've never beaten the Sinistar. He lived all the time. Beware, I'm dead. I never heard that line. All right. And my second boss. What was my second boss? Damn it. I was so good at remembering Sinistar. Oh, snap. Okay, my second favorite boss of all time has to be from, you can either find it on Midway Arcade Treasures 2 or back in the arcade in the mid-80s. It was called Narc. You guys remember Narc?
Oh, good choice, Mr. Big.
So, yeah, okay, so you're playing that. First, let me build up to Mr. Big. So, yeah, for those of you who don't know what Narc is, you're I guess, a narcotics officer, and you either play the white dude in the blue shirt or the black dude in the red shirt, and you would go around and you would shoot drug dealers, and they were throwing needles and stuff at you. You had to dodge the needles. The thing that got me about that game is it was so violent. Like, you had a rocket launcher, and it would just blow the drug dealers up into, like, a million bleeding pieces all over the screen. Just ridiculous amounts of violence. But apparently it was okay because you're a narcotics officer. Anyway, so, you know, you had a fast car, you drove fast, and you got to the end of that game, and, like, you saw this guy named Mr. Big. And Mr. Big is this, he's got a big face, he's wearing big sunglasses, he almost looks like the guy on the Show Me My Opponent video. He had a big white hat on, white suit, and what, there's like, you're like, as you're going through his palace, there's a picture of him on the wall, and it just says the word me above it. And then so, you see Mr. Big, like right before you get to the last boss, Mr. Big's like riding around you, you know, and he's like shooting you, and he's in his wheelchair, and he's acting crazy. And then you finally beat that, and you're like, oh, I beat the game. No, that wasn't Mr. Big. Mr. Big is actually this giant face that you have to shoot. He's a big robotic alien face. And you blow up his face, and he's like, you see, he's like a spinal cord, and he's shooting his eyeballs at you and stuff. It's terrible. It makes no sense at all. No one can beat it. No one can beat Narc. That game is impossible to beat. And rightly so, because you can't beat Mr. Big. Just like you can't beat, you know, the boss from Mo Money Taxes. No, I guess you can beat the boss if you have, like, I don't know, fly honeys with you. Maybe that's how you beat Mr. Big. So, yeah, Mr. Big and Sinistar are my two favorites.
What was the boss that you felt the best after you beat? Like, I kicked his ass. Like, you worked so hard and you got him, finally.
Ooh, I don't know, that's a good one. Vic, what's yours?
Mine, I actually have an anecdote about this.
Uh-oh.
But my boss of choice, and this was a revelation not only for me, but my entire family and most of my extended family. And I'm not kidding about this. This was a group effort. But this boss was Dracula from Castlevania 1.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
The original Castlevania on the NES. So when Justin Fick was a wee lad, we went and bought Castlevania for the NES and Ghosts and Goblins for the NES at the same time for Halloween. And by we, I mean the game-playing crowd was myself, Curtis Fick, and Uncle Augie Fick, who at this point in history, in the mid to late 80s, went by the name Uncle A-Rad. Now Uncle Augie was the crazy Fick uncle, who was the one that taught us all the dirty words, all the dirty songs, and was also the master video game player.
Oh, man.
So it was pretty much the three of us. Also Papa Fick was big on video games at this time, and I think Mama Fick had just dropped out because she got stymied at Zelda. But we had a crowd. We had the video game crowd, the Fick clan, and Ghosts and Goblins quickly stymies us. But Castlevania, we make steady progress on Castlevania, and every boss, starting with Frankenstein in the fourth stage, was a monumental victory for the family when we defeated that boss. And I also recall the ecstasy when Uncle A-Rad discovered that the holy water will freeze any boss when it hits him, and you can just sit there and keep hitting it with holy water and kill anything.
Oh, man.
So we're gradually making progress up to Dracula, which is stage six, and we started having problems with our tape. We called them tapes back in the day. And Castlevania started glitching out.
Oh, man.
Every once in a while. So it was pretty much, you know, but by the time you got to those later levels, it was a 50-50 shot of your game completely glitching out. So it was definitely a monumental occasion when and me and Curtis Fick were asleep for this, but Uncle A-Rad and his bass player, no, not his bass player, his guitar player, Paulie. Because Uncle A-Rad was in a band.
Uncle A-Rad's bass player, Polly. What the hell?
So Uncle A-Rad, with the help of Polly, finally get up to Dracula. And it was such a monumental occasion that they videotaped it to show the entire family.
Do you still have this tape?
Maybe. It's got to be somewhere. I don't know. It's... like we're looking at maybe like 80, like mid to late 80s, so I don't know. But this was also the time when so Uncle A-Rad and Polly, they try over and over and over again on this tape to kill Dracula, and there are many takes, many failed attempts, and a lot of swearing on this videotape. But this is also the time when they finally kill Dracula and he turns into the big gargoyle. And I've never seen two grown men themselves so quickly as Uncle A-Rad and his guitar player, Polly, when they discovered that they had a whole nother boss to deal with, the whole full health bar, but it took them an hour on tape to kill it.
Oh, man.
Now, keep in mind that Uncle A-Rad was under the misconception, now, for those of us that remember Castlevania, that the only way to hurt Dracula was to hit him in the head with the axe. Now we didn't discover that you could use any weapon in the game to do this. Only the axe.
Dude, he sucked.
So it got to the So it got to the point where we finally discovered that you could also hit him in the head with a boomerang. That cheers erupted through the Fickerata clan when we discovered you could hit him with a boomerang and God forbid the plain old whip. And so, and then when it was a joint effort, it was Uncle A-Rad, Polly, Justin Fick, Curtis Fick, with the onlooking of most of the extended family. This was at, I think, Thanksgiving. It was about a month later when we finally killed the gargoyle and watched the credits roll. That was like someone graduated. That was a party. When we finally took out Dracula.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, man.
So that was probably the best feeling.
Well, all right, Wayne Miller.
All right, well, mine doesn't really top that, I guess. I never had like my whole family into it, but we me and my buddies used to play a little game called Final Fantasy Tactics, and we love this game so much. But I guess in the end of the first act, one of the guys that you had with you in your party all the time, his name is Gafgaron, I think, something like that, he turns against you, and you have to fight him. And you give him all, you know, he's got the weapon that has magic on it, and it does all this stuff to you. You've been using that the whole game, and you like it, now you got to fight it. So we beat our heads against this match for a good long time, until one of us comes up with the idea to just take all his shit away before we went into the battle. So we took all his armor away and all his weapons away, and it was a really easy fight after that. We even looked in the strategy guide. Strategy guide said, oh, this is level 5 battle. This is going to be the hardest one yet. And it was easy after that. So we were all pretty proud of ourselves for that one. And then we figured out how to beat the whole game with chemists.
Dude, that story sucked by comparison.
It did.
Go hide yourself in the closet. It's time for feedback!
Okay, so feedback this week, we've got one. It's from Mark G.
Well, hold on. In our defense, we did a show just like 4 or 5 days ago, so it hasn't even been a whole week.
That's true. All right, so Princess Peach writes, I have an idea. You say you never get emails, so maybe you should just reinstate the contest to get more feedback. You need not reward a prize, since your listeners have no lives and will send in submissions just for the honorable recognition. And then from the Wiki Fairy, we have, let's address this before we address Wiki Fairy. What do you think about the contest, Blake Buck?
I love it. All right, are you guys ready for the contest that I came up with just now, as in 2 seconds ago?
All right, go.
All right, I want you to submit your favorite...
Wait, we got a segue into it now.
Oh, that's right. And now it's time for the contest. All right, so basically, I guess my idea for the contest this week is take a Nintendo character like Princess Peach, a good franchise character from Nintendo lore, and write erotic fan fiction about them.
Dude, sir, Blake Buck, I think you just struck gold.
Oh man, that's gonna get the alarm real quick when we start reading them off on the show.
Oh, all right, wow. we should add the stipulation that all entries will be read on the air.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Erotic fan fiction, but keep it clean. Like, if that makes any sense. Does that make sense?
Erotic fan fiction with FCC rules. Go.
Yeah, I mean, don't be talking about, you know, sorry.
See, it's gotta all be through innuendo, baby.
Innuendo, that's right. You got to be subtle, guys. And what did they win? Do we have a prize for them?
We got donated $200. So maybe we can actually give a prize for this one.
Dude, we ain't giving no prizes. What are you talking about?
Well, that's what the money's for.
Son, that money is for hosting bills. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's true. If you'd like to donate more money.
It's donated. BestDamnPodcastEver.com.
See, here's the deal. If we can start breaking even every month for hosting and such, if we can start breaking even and making a little extra, then we'll start giving away prizes.
But for now, what's the prize going to be, guys? Obviously, the endless recognition on this show that you would receive. Maybe we could give them a custom forum title.
No, I got it. This will cost us nothing. Here's what we'll do, except maybe shipping and handling. We'll print out that picture. We'll print out a picture of us, and we'll all sign it and give it to them.
Dude, I would have to sign it, then I'd have to send it to you.
Well, we send it to each other and then send it. Look, here's what we'll do. I'll print out.
We should do a both of those. We should do a bunch of those.
Yeah, I'll print off like 50 of them, and we'll send them to each other and sign them.
Dude, you know how much it's gonna cost to send 50? We'll send 10. Come on, son, get with it.
Dude, they're just like pieces of paper.
Yeah, we're still working it out. So maybe by next week we'll know what the prize is.
Look, we'll argue this later. You'll get something cool. All right.
Yeah, I say so. Let's say I don't know. What's today? Today is
Do we want this to be a month long thing, or I think we need to give them a little while.
3 shows from now, that'd be right around the first of the month, right? A little after, maybe.
Sounds good.
No, actually, way after. Who knows?
Also, if you'd like to send us an audio file of you reading your entry.
Oh, that's true. That you could get bonus points.
That would be good too. You can add any kind of, you know, effects you want to put in there. Make it nice, you know.
But you gotta keep it fairly G-rated. If it goes over the line, and we can't really tell you what the line is, when you hear the buzzer, you'll know you've gone over the line. But keep it fairly G-rated, and maybe we'll get some sort of picture in the mail, some sort of prize we can come up with. Who knows? So that's the contest. So 3 shows from now, I'm not sure when that would be. I don't know. Sometime in March, we'll be picking the winners.
That's good, Blake Buck. I like that contest. Good deal.
All right, so finally, you know, I was just going to say fan fiction. And, like, when I got to the word, like, fan fiction, I was like, I should just throw the word erotic in there. And now it's the contest.
Like, when you say fan fiction, erotic is implied anyway.
That's true. All right, so our final little piece of feedback here we got, it's from the Wiki Fairy. He said, we should have noticed the favorite with the U, maybe the color with a U, too. I'm not across the ocean. I'm much closer to you, says the Wiki Fairy. So who knows?
I think the Wiki Fairy is actually Simon, my roommate.
Oh, no.
Because he's crazy Aussie, and he spells stuff with a U.
That's crazy. All right. Well, now it's time for the stump.
All right, Blake Bug, I got stump heat for you here.
Son, I'm ready to break it. I'm ready to break you like a small pixie stick. That's the smallest thing I can think of.
Dude, you are not going to get this one. You're not going to get it, baby.
Bring your heat.
I'm going to get it. Lay it on me, time splitters.
Damn it. All right, my game this week is Zeliard.
What the f*** is that? Ooh, Zeliard. It's a bullshit game.
It's Dungeon Dice. All right.
This sounds like Dungeon Dice before Dungeon Dice was computerized. That's what Zeliard sounds like.
Pen and paper Dungeon Dice. All right, Zeliard, obviously, you and your gang of Zelions come from the planet Zeliards, and you got to make a home here in Azeroth. Problem is that there's a contractual obligation with Blizzard Corporation, and you can't secure the licensing fees. So you've got to battle the demons of Blizzard QA, of Blizzard legal team, in order to secure your homeland.
That's pretty close. No, Zeliard was a Link knockoff. It's like not Zelda knockoff, but Link. You know, the second one that was a side-scroller top-down combination? This thing came out in 1987 in Japan and 1990 in the West. It's published or developed by Game Arts and published by Sierra Entertainment. This thing was made before they figured out how to do smooth scrolling in DOS.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, it was just like one like brick at a time it would scroll.
Yeah, one brick at a time, exactly. So it plays like and it took an amazing 1 megabyte of space.
Oh man, that's huge.
Now, speaking of Link and speaking of bosses, Dark Link at the end of Zelda 2, lame, worst Zelda boss ever.
Woo.
Retarded.
Dude, don't tell me, baby. Don't tell me. That thing's still queued up on my GameCube. The 3 of us in this apartment have been trying to beat that game. We're in the last castle. We can't do it. It's too big.
You suck.
Dude, shut up. Ninja guy.
Don't be talking about that game. Devil.
All right, Fake, what you got?
I'm going to take a chance here. I'm going into dangerous territory because I think I'm going into Blake Buck territory. I don't know.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh,
son.
My stump this week is Radiant Silvergun.
Wait, say that again?
Radiant Silvergun.
Radiant Silvergun. You guys come up with a Radiant Silvergun? Oh. All right, well, obviously, you've got, it's a vampire simulator, and you've got the silver gun of radiosity that allows you to shoot the silver stakes through the vampire's hearts, and they turn to dust, and they explode, and then you gotta collect the dust, and then give it to this guy, and he turns it into more ammo for your guns, and then you get the babes. It's all about getting the babes.
Okay, not quite, but I think I like that game better. Actually, no. Radiant Silver Gun is actually it's an awesome game because it's by Treasure.
Oh man,
of Gunstar Heroes and fame. Radiant Silver Gun is a vertical scrolling shooter for the Sega Saturn. It was released in 98.
Oh man, Sega Saturn game you don't know, Blake Buck?
Look, Blake Buck didn't get a Sega Saturn until like 2 years ago. I've been trying to fill out my collection.
Oh god. And then Radiant Silver Gun is cool because it's kind of like conceptually, it's like the opposite of because it's all about, you know, minimalist, just one gun, two colors, blah 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 blah. Radiant Silver Gun, you have seven guns at the same time that you fire by pressing different button combinations. And then not only that, but you start on stage three, and then once you finish stage three, you can go back to stage two or go to stage four. Like that's how confusing and awesome this game is.
Well, all right. Now I got to think of some heat. I don't really have anything. I got something. This is not within my normal stipulations of 3 years or less, but it's almost within there. And it's a game that you guys should probably know about but don't because you're dumb. In fact, I think Justin Fix should have played this game, and I'm pretty sure I've showed it to William Miller. So you guys should be able to get to this one. It's called Bangai O.
Now, is that the one where, like, it's the arcade cabinet, and you've got, like, a picture of your boss on the screen, and you've got, like, a finger, and you stick it in a...
Why was that my first guess, too? I don't know why. Like, I don't know if it's, like bang guy. I don't know. That was my first impression.
No, you lame.
Arcade finger up the ass game, and it's rhythm based.
Oh no! Keep going. I want to hear the rest of this.
Okay, it's a rhythm game.
All right, look, no, it's finger up the ass game, but it's Bangai O, right? So it's like Yu-Gi-Oh. So it's probably a card game aimed at little kids. With a television series associated with it.
Oh, Lord. No.
And it actually has a card for...
Believe in the heart of the cards. My grandfather's...
Bangai O was a treasure game on the Sega Dreamcast where you played a little like a robot and you could switch between two firing modes. One of them was like missiles, a little home and in missiles, and one of them was laser beams. And depending on how, like, many explosions, like, there was stuff blowing up all over the place. And depending on how many explosions there were, like, in close proximity to you, when you press, like, the bomb button, you would get an exponentially larger number of missiles. So, like, the more dangerously you played, the more missiles you got and the more stuff that you could blow up. It was crazy.
I remember this game. You did show me this game, Blake Buck. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm showing this game because it's crazy because it's like 1,000 missiles on screen at once.
I remember this game. I remember Blake Buck trying to show me this game over Box.
That doesn't work.
For those of us that are new to the podcast, Box is iChat.
Video iChat.
And I'm trying to watch Blake Buck play this game. Yeah, iChat video. So I'm trying to watch this small box. That has Blake Buck in a smaller box with Bangai O.
I remember that.
And it did not involve fingers up.
There were no fingers involved. All right, so I guess I'm the winner this week, guys. Across the board, I got everybody's stumps, you know.
You didn't get my stump, baby.
Dude, I stumped both of your
Shh, Blake Buck won this week.
Today was triple stump.
All right, now it's time for the outro. So that's us for this week and the best damn podcast ever. What do you guys think about that?
I like this new show format, Blake Buck.
Oh, that was pretty good, Mr. Blake Buck.
It's true. I'm liking the new format.
I like how we still managed to fill out an hour and 15 minutes.
It's true. If you'd like to send us any feedback on what you think about the new show, you can send us an email at feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com or call our listener line at 845-BATTLE-9. So, guess that's it. Do you guys got anything else to add?
I don't think so.
Every week, like, of course, like to thank Mr. Barbelay. Easy to say.
Oh, always we have to thank Mr. Barbelay, our hero,
for salvaging our unintelligible babble.
Like, I'm serious. Like, if we didn't have Tom Barbelay to do our shows, like, I'm just so spoiled now. Like, the show would just end when he leaves. That would be it.
Yep.
We'd either get somebody else to do it. Blake Buck can't do it anymore. There's no way I could edit these shows ever again.
And I just want to take the opportunity to say that that I did notice some feedback on the forums that someone didn't like Mr. Barbelay's tunes. I just want to say that those are quickly becoming my favorite part of the show.
It's true.
Yep, I agree.
Speaking of tunes, guys, I meant to mention this earlier, but I just forgot. You know, this isn't really related to the show anyway, but I just wanted you to know that I've mapped a button on my keyboard that plays Freebird. So from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm Sugar Man.
And I'm Dog Pound.
And we will see you next time. I can't stop it. It keeps going.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
We need to actually... We need to sing a song for Mr. Barbelay to the tune of, was it, Barbara Ann? You know what I'm talking about.
That song. Oh. Could you sing it for us, Justin Fick?
Ba 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 lay. Ba 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 ba. Easy to sing.
Sing.